desert, when the caravans warded against the fear of the night with stories of great men. They would tell of the day that the people of Isman gathered at dusk in thousands to get their first glimpse of the rebel prince since the Sultim trials, as he stood on an executioner's stage, waiting for the axe to fall. The stories would never tell that the rebel prince was not the only captive of the Sultan on that day. They would never know that he could have escaped capture had he not made so many of his people escape before him. They would never tell that he had laid down his weapons and surrendered himself to his father in order to save those others who were left behind. The storytellers never knew that the man who stood on that stage did it by his own choice, that he could have escaped his fate if he were a less good man, a less brave man. On that day, 100,000 men and women would come to watch, and each would tell the story of what they saw there. The tales would cross the sands in the months that followed, repeated across the desert and on foreign shores. The same stories would be told again among caravans in the centuries that followed, when the time came to teach their children of all the great heroes who had come before them in the desert. But there would only ever be 6 people who would know the story of what truly happened that day. The people of the caravans would never know what came to pass in the prison cells below the palace between dawn and dusk, before the moment that all of Isman saw on the stage. 6 people who had all fought side by side and were imprisoned side by side for it. They sat in the dark, awaiting their fates like thousands who had sat there before them. They passed whispers inside their cell, swearing that the rebellion would not die there with them, though by dawn, 2 of them would be dead. 6 people who would never tell the story of what took place on the day that would be known forever as the day the rebel prince died. Chapter 50. When the legendary Princess Hawa died at Saramotai, time lost all sense. The sun rose to watch her fall. It stopped in the sky in the dead of night, and the stars stared down alongside to witness the birth of grief in a new world. The entire world held its breath as Atulla dropped dead because his heart was torn in two. Time didn't stop now. It was already running out. There was no time to plan, no time to race for reinforcements or even a gun. I didn't know what to do, or even what I was running towards. I just knew that I was running, pressing through the mob in the streets, racing towards the palace. No time to get help, no time to plan a rescue. That was what the Sultan was counting on. He was going to execute Ahmed, and we barely even had time to get there, let alone plan how to get him out. We were going to have to make a plan on the fly, like we always did. We were good at that. I saw a man with a gun as we shoved by. Jin. I grabbed his arm. He stopped, looking where I was pointing. I didn't need to say anything further. Jin grabbed the man, wrenching his arms behind his back, holding him as I grabbed the gun. And then we were moving again, rushing away from the man's shouted accusations. The crowd started to get too thick before we were even within sight of the palace. I pushed. The streets were choked with people, and I couldn't move anymore. I couldn't even see the square. I shoved forward, but soon I was trapped in the mass of bodies. I squirmed through until I was shoved up against a wall. I looked up. I couldn't climb that. Not alone. But I could get up there with help. Jin knew what I was thinking before I'd even finished thinking it. "You'll be alone," he said. Someone jostled him, pressing us closer together until we were flush against the wall. Alone, with a gun, powerless and bleeding from a half dozen places. I know. I ran my tongue along my lips. They were caked with salt. Jin lifted me up. I grabbed the ledge above, dragging myself up painfully, and painfully slow, fighting through the stabbing in my side. My feet hit the ledge and I started to run, ignoring the shooting pain in my body. A jump carried me easily over the narrow gap onto the next roof. I landed hard, scraping my knee. I was back up, leaving a streak of new blood behind. I jumped to the next roof, startling some birds into flight. I kept going, shoving forward, onwards and onwards, until there was nowhere to go. And I was standing on a roof overlooking the square in front of the palace. Ahmed stood alone, chained by his wrists to the stage set above the heaving mass of people. His eyes were cast down. I knew what he was seeing. The images of pain and death. The writhing monsters. The last thing Shira had seen. The last thing Ahmed would see. Unless I saved him. A man was reading out what I could only guess was a list of my rebel prince's supposed crimes. I couldn't hear him over the din of the crowd. Above him, I spotted the balcony from which I'd watched Shira die. They had shielded it with iron instead of carved wood after the riots. Through the gaps in the lattice, I thought I could just make out the Sultan, surveying the scene, come to watch another son die. As the list reached its end, Ahmed finally looked up, out over the sea of Mirajin citizens, facing his people. "The Sultan," the man cried, "in his great wisdom and mercy, has agreed to grant leniency to any other rebels. They will keep their heads but be condemned to a life of penance serving this country which they betrayed." Leniency, my ass. The Sultan had told me himself he needed to win back the love of his people. I remembered him chastising Kadir for Shira's execution. The people didn't love you for killing an innocent. "But for his crimes against his own blood, Prince Ahmed has been condemned to die." But Ahmed, he told the people, had killed Kadir, his own brother. They had to see Ahmed die. I aimed my gun at the balcony, squinting. That was a small target from this far, even for me, and I didn't know if I had a shot to waste. Over the roofs of Miraji behind me, the sun was setting. I flattened myself on my stomach and aimed the gun. God, I hoped it was a good gun. I didn't have a plan beyond shooting the executioner, but that had to be enough, for now at least. I had to save Ahmed, and then I could worry about whatever came next. The executioner stepped onto the stage, and my heart stuttered. They hadn't sent a man to kill Ahmed. The Sultan had sent an Abdal. Even I couldn't make that shot. I had the executioner in my crosshairs, and I was helpless. I aimed the gun all the same. I fired. One clean shot through the knee. A scream went up from the crowd at the sound of gunfire. But the executioner didn't so much as stagger. I fired again and again and again, aiming desperately for the tiny target of its foot, until the gun in my hand was empty. Until the Abdal had reached Ahmed. It forced him to his knees in front of the wooden block they'd laid there. Ahmed didn't fight. He knelt down with dignity, his eyes going down to the gruesome scenes below as he laid his head on the executioner's block. I reached out for the desert. I could feel it scattered through the streets, sand invading the city. I started to gather it to me, but the pain stabbed through my side, sending me down with a cry, scattering the sand back to street dust. The mechanical man took one step backwards, swinging the axe upwards, and I was helpless. I was helpless without my Demji powers, without any bullets. Unable to stop it, unable to do anything. Ahmed! His name ripped out of me, through the crowd, over the din of people calling out, pressing forward, calling for his head, for his freedom. I was too far away for him to hear me, too far away to reach him. But somehow from the block, his head tilted up just as the axe swung high. He looked straight at me. His eyes met mine. The low rays of the sun struck the iron of the axe, turning it into a blazing light as it reached its pinnacle. But the sun didn't stop. Time didn't stop. The world didn't show any sympathy for my grief. The axe fell. It turned from sunlight to iron, to blood. Chapter 51. I didn't cry until I was safe. I wasn't even sure how we got back to the hidden house. All I knew was a hand leading me through streets that had turned to chaos as soon as the axe fell, through a world that had stopped making sense. Jin. He could have been leading me to the executioner's block, and I wouldn't have known until I was looking up at the crowd with the axe hanging above me. But then we were through the doors, into the safe haven of the hidden house, where we'd all been together only 2 nights before. Sara was waiting inside the doors, a screaming baby on her hip. Her lips were moving, but I didn't hear anything she said. Jin pulled me past her, and it came on like a punch to the gut. My knees gave out below me on the stairs. I sobbed, for all the dead, for all the losses, for the things that had been taken away. It was seared into my mind forever. The blade, the blood, the eyes. The look in his eyes as they met mine across the crowd, a second before he died. And it was my fault. Mine and someone I trusted, someone I thought was innocent. Scream came on so sudden and violent that I had to stuff my Shima into my mouth to keep it from being heard through the walls of the house. It tasted of sweat and sand and of Jin's skin somehow. I could hear the sounds from the next room. Voices dropped low, tentative with uncertainty and thick with grief. What was left of the rebellion? The folk who'd escaped the attack at Shazad's. The murmur was soothing. I closed my eyes and leaned my head against the wall. Too many people had traded their lives for someone else's now. Bahi had burned to save Shazad. Shira had walked to the executioner's block for her son. Rahim had thrown himself on the mercy of his merciless father for Layla. My mother had bowed her head to a noose for me. I thought about revenge and about love and about sacrifice and the great and terrible things I'd seen people do. I thought about how many people I'd seen lay their lives down for the rebellion over and over. I thought about the moment the axe fell, the eyes locking with mine a second before the light left them. The stairs creaked with a new weight next to me. I knew it was Jin without opening my eyes. I knew before he leaned his weight into my side, before he laced his hand with mine, running his thumb across my palm in a slow circle. "We're not done yet," my voice scraped out. Almost gone, but still there. I finally opened my eyes. "I know." The low murmur of voices died with our entrance, leaving nothing but the chanting in the streets below. A constant thrum like a heartbeat. Good. Silence was death, and the rebellion wasn't dead yet. And every eye in the room was on me. rebels I knew well and rebels I didn't. Hala's golden hands were wrapped around a steaming cup someone had given her, dark hair all over her face. Sara sat in a corner, her son asleep in her arms, staring through the shutters into the street below and blinking back tears. Sam was running his finger around the rim of an empty glass over and over. Maz was wrapped in a blanket, shaking violently, blue hair sticking up at all angles. Tamid was stitching the wound in Iz's arm from where the bullet had torn through his wing, obviously grateful for something to do. There was only one spot left free at the head of the table. Half of the people in the room were sitting on the floor rather than take that place. I felt Jin tense behind me as he saw it. I cleared my throat, but my voice came out steady. We need a plan. I fought the instinct to look for Shahzad to start making one with me. She had been taken with Ahmed, Delilah, Emin, Rahim, Navid. They'd all been captured along with dozens of others. What is there left to plan? Hala was looking into her coffee cup instead of me. She squeezed her eyes shut. You don't think it's only a matter of time before that axe comes down again and again and again? Hala. Maz cut her off with a hand on her arm. She pulled herself up short, opening her eyes, staring me down. I flinched at the gaze. Her eyes might be the dark brown of any desert girl's, but they still reminded me of Emin's golden eyes. Until everyone else is gone, too, she finished. No, I held my ground. The Sultan might have thought he was using me those months in the palace, but I hadn't spent all that time there without learning a thing or two about the man who ruled over Miraji. The Sultan was smart, too smart to risk more rioting in the streets. The Sultan is losing his grip on his people. He knows that. That's why Rahim wasn't executed. He needed Ahmed to die publicly. Someone in a corner made a noise like a sob, quickly smothered in their shima. But for the rest of them, he gains more by showing mercy than by showing force. You're thinking he'll send them away, Hala said. Instead of executing them, Maz filled in. A spark of life flared back in the room briefly. I had to tell them the rest, the thing I'd figured out. I was going to have to tell all of them, but my eyes kept drifting to Hala in her corner. Waiting was not going to make it easier. There's something else. The room went quiet. We lost someone today. I could see it all in my mind. A head lifting on the block, meeting my eyes. Creatures of illusion and deceit. But it wasn't Ahmed. My eyes the color of the sky. His the same shade as molten gold. Staring straight at me. I knew those eyes, but they weren't Ahmed's. My meaning dawned slowly through the room, slowest across the golden-skinned Demji's face. Emin. Hala, I'm so sorry. Grief and rage warred across her face while the rest of us were silent for Emin. Her head dropped into her hands. Ahmed wouldn't have let anyone go to the executioner's block for him, but he wasn't the only one being kept prisoner. Half the rebellion would have sooner walked onto that stage than let Ahmed do it. Shahzad would have worked out the plan in all the confusion of the attack. Delilah, with her hair dyed dark, concealing her Demji side. She might not be able to hide a whole rebellion, but she was good enough to hide her brother for a time, conceal his identity under an illusion of a different face, whichever one Emin had been wearing when they were taken. and Emin was good enough to take Ahmed's place. Not just good enough, more than good. Emin had walked into an execution for our prince. Ahmed is alive. I looked around the table, the small cramped room in this, our last refuge. The Sultan might have bested us today, but he can't plan for everything. He didn't plan on me slipping out of his grip. I met Tamid's eyes. He didn't plan on us escaping, and he sure as hell didn't plan on Ahmed living. So he's not planning on us saving him either. Who is going to lead us? Iz asked. His eyes turned to Jin.
Don't look at me, Jin said.
He was leaning against the doorframe, like he might disappear on the rebellion again any second. I can lead us. That drew every eye in the room to me. I waited, but there wasn't a single word of protest, not a word of argument. I was a Demji. I was the blue-eyed bandit. I was their friend. I had learned strategy from Shazad. I had been among the enemy. I hadn't left them when Jin had, and they believed me when I said that I could lead. We were going to rescue our people, our friends, our family. And when we had them all back, we were going to march Rahim to Iliad's for an army. I pressed away from the wall. I was unsteady, but I was still standing. We were still here. And this time, the Sultan had given us an advantage, the only thing that was truly invincible, not an immortal creature, but an idea, a legend, a story. The blue-eyed bandit was always more powerful than I was. The rebel prince was always more powerful than Ahmed. And now we could write a better story than the prodigal prince. One no one would ever forget. One the entirety of Miraji would stand behind. The prince who returned from the dead to take his throne and save his people.
The End. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Traitor to the Throne by Alwyn Hamilton, narrated by Sunila Nankani. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.